Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
What I love most about AA, and you're going to find out before I'm done, I love everything about AA, is the simplicity of it. There's a phrase in our book, and I ain't a chapter and pages guy. This is not an exercise in memorization. It's about the application of principles to my life. But there's a phrase in our book, and what it says is this: at certain times, the alcoholic has no effective mental defense against the first drink, and except in a few rare cases, that's like somebody chaining you in a basement, neither he nor any other human can provide such a defense. His defense must come. It don't say it might come, should come, or ought to come. It says it must come from a higher power. The single most important fact in my life as I stand here tonight is I got a power in my life that I choose to call God, who does for me one day at a time what I could never do for myself. If I had the power to quit drinking on my own, I'd have never come to AA. Why should I? Why should I? I establish and grow in that relationship through living, not analyzing, discussing, or memorizing, through living to the best of my ability, one day at a time. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is outlined by the founders in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is the reason that I pray before I introduce me from behind the podium, because me didn't get me here. Me did not get me here. Left to my own devices, I guarantee everybody in this room, I would have surely destroyed myself years ago. That prayer reminds me of two things that I believe are vital and crucial to me staying here. First and foremost, the reason I'm in Ames tonight is to do God's will, not mine. And it also serves to remind me that He is in charge here tonight, and as always, thank God. I am not. Good evening. My name is Kent, alcoholic. You know, I was raised right. If my mother was here, she'd jump up and say, "You ain't turned out right." But anyway, I was raised right, and I want to demonstrate that. I want to thank this committee for the honor and the privilege of participating once again in the life-giving, life-changing, life-saving fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is an honor and a privilege to give back in this fellowship. I don't know about anybody else in here. I can only speak for me. I'm here to share my experience tonight, but I came here more dead than alive. I came here more dead than alive and didn't want to be alive anymore. And I love how Wilson writes, "I have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, into a level of life better than the best I've ever known." I love it. I love how new people say at a meeting, you know, "Man, if I would have wrote down on a piece of paper what I would have wanted when I got here, I would have really sold myself short." Y'all ever hear that before? Of course you would, because the human mind is incapable of grasping and understanding the richness and the fullness of the grace of God. That's why. That's why. So, you know, it's an honor and a privilege to be here, and it is to do anything in AA. I'm on the cleanup committee at my home group. You know, I'm the guy to clean up. I sweep up and, you know, clean up y'all's coffee. You know, and where I come from, we leave the hall looking better than it was when we came. That's the way I was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I want to say thank you. I want to thank Scott for missing me at the airport. And, you know, what can I say? He was like, "I don't know how you got past me." And I said, "Well, there's some things from my past that would indicate I'm pretty good at that, right?" And thank the committee for the wonderful fruit basket and for your kindness and your hospitality. I just want to say thank you. That's what my grandmother taught me. Just say thank you. And so I say thank you. I want to talk to our new friends here tonight. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're anything like me, when I came up in here, I didn't know anything. I didn't come here with AA etiquette, right? I had never been to AA, nor did I know anybody who had, or at least would admit to having been to AA, right? We didn't discuss Alcoholics Anonymous down to Brownlee's Tavern. It just never came up. right? So I walked up in here. I didn't know nothing about AA. I didn't know what a sponsor was. I didn't know what a home group was. I didn't know what an open or closed meeting was. I didn't know a big book from a Rand McNally Atlas when I came up in here. Nobody sprinkled pixie dust over my head when I came in here, and all of a sudden, oh, I understand what's going on here. I had the word mother wrapped around every other word I said. I mean, when I come here as I am. And I'm very grateful for the long-term members of Alcoholics Anonymous in Ohio who met me when I got here. There were three men in my home group who were at the 1950 convention in Cleveland. And they didn't talk down to me like I didn't know anything. They didn't make me feel less than. I already felt less than. Now, what they did is they shared the program and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous with me. No, so when I came in here, I didn't know nothing, you know, and so, but I'm a street guy. And in the street, how do you stay alive? You watch and you listen. So I came in here with street mentality because that's what I am. And I started watching and I started listening. And I saw very, very quickly two very distinctive groups of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. People who staying sober and people who ain't, right? You see it every meeting you go to. I'm talking about the simplicity of this thing, right? So the people who wasn't staying sober, you know, they was in and out. I went to a club, you know, that's where I sobered up at, and there was a lot of people coming in and out. And I ain't criticizing. If you've been in and out, thank God you're here. We don't shoot our wounded in here. I'm sharing my experience. They was in and out. Every time they came back in from being out, they looked worse than the last time they came back in from being out. I didn't see nobody coming in here passing out $50 bills and driving a BMW and talking about how good it was out there, right? They talked about what? Restless, irritable, discontented, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. We'll call them group one. And then there's group two. And if you've been here today any amount of time, you've seen some group two people in action out there working at the registration, greeting at the door. You see them at your home group making coffee, setting out the literature, putting up the tables and chairs. They talk about God, big book, steps, spirituality, enjoying life sober, and helping others. We'll call them group two. Now, I don't know about y'all, but it sure looked to me like the people in group two had a heck of a better deal than the people in group one, right? So I start watching the people in group two to see what is it they have in common. Let's keep this simple, okay? And they had some things in common. First, they had something called a sponsor. Now, when I came here, I didn't know what a sponsor was. They said, get a sponsor. I didn't know what that meant. Right? I used to play softball for Cronin's Tavern. They was our sponsor. Right? I got free beer and clothes out of that deal. I thought, well, maybe this AA ain't too bad, right? So I started looking y'all over, right? And y'all told me what a sponsor was. You told me that a sponsor is somebody who has working knowledge and experience with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as outlined in the big book by the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, who is willing to take the time to sit down with me and walk me page by page through the program of recovery. And just as importantly, maybe even more importantly, is a living demonstration of those principles in their life, who can show me through the power of their example what my life can be like if I do what they do, not if I know what they know or I go where they go. Do you follow me? If I do what they do, my sponsor is me, only sober longer, who has been through what I'm going through now, right? And I have sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous today. I'm sponsored by Bob D in Las Vegas. I have the continued love, guidance, and care and support of the two men who sponsored and raised me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's Bill Finley in Lorain, Ohio, and Kenny Bombalicki in Cleveland. Bill got 51 years, wore his body out in service in his fellowship. Kenny has 43, Bob has 36. Do the math. That's a lot of continuous sobriety one day at a time here, which is at my disposal on a daily basis if I choose to use it. If you're new in here, I want to share something with you. You're going to be under a lot of pressure to get a sponsor up in here. Having a sponsor is a great thing. Being sponsorable is even better. I sponsor a lot of men in AA. I sponsor guys all over the States. I sponsor guys in Canada. I sponsor a lot of guys in Europe and a lot of other places. Somebody said to me recently, Ken, how many people do you sponsor? I said, oh, about half of them. Is that not the truth? Right? Everything in Alcoholics Anonymous is contingent upon actions that I take, not people, places, or things that I know. Right? So I like to do something when we got a big gathering like this sometime. I think I'd do it tonight. Would everybody in here tonight who would be willing to sponsor a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, please raise your hand. Thank you very much. For those of you who are new and who don't have a sponsor, I just hooked you up. Right? No one ever need leave an AA meeting without the benefit of sponsorship. So if you're new here tonight, and see, if you anything like me, people always laugh when I do that. If you anything like me, you don't know anybody here. And you don't know if somebody got 10 years or 10 minutes, nor do you know if they would be willing to help a guy like me who didn't even feel he deserved any help. So if you're new here and you don't have a sponsor, the help you need just identified itself. What you do with that information is up to you. Okay? Another thing, the people in group two, they had something called a home group. They told me, a guy told me, he said, if you ain't got a home group, you're homeless in AA. Homeless don't sound too hot to me. So I got this home group, right? My home group, the Friday Night Vintage Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sandusky, Ohio. We started in 1938 as an Oxford group meeting. So we've been around for a minute. And I'm going to say something about my home group. Ain't the best group in the world. Ain't the worst group in the world. It's just an AA group. One of the things my sponsor Bill taught me when I was new is, son, it's okay to stop competing now. You know, my entire life was lived on a better than or less than basis prior to AA. And you know, something funny happens when I live better than or less than. I'm never a part of. Anything in here that promotes separation is fatal to me. Our common welfare should come first. We just heard it. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. I'm going to tell you something about my home group. Best place for me to be, and I hope you feel that yours is the best place for you to be, but that doesn't make my group better than yours. Okay? This is not a competition. I want you to know something about the spiritual malady. It promotes separation. Right? And the fellowship promotes unity. Because the spiritual malady knows that there is strength in numbers. It knows that. When I'm sponsoring somebody, you ever had this happen with a sponsee? And they start building cases against people in meetings? Right? You have a sponsee like that? Maybe some of y'all done that. Right? And what happens is I slowly begin to separate myself, because that's what the spiritual malady wants. And I'm on my way back to drinking. I don't even know it. Anybody ever seen that before? Yeah, I see it happen a lot. So I have this group. You know, our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I think we do a pretty good job of that, and we have a lot of fun in the process. I also have another group Thursday night in the action. Bob made me get that because about 30 weekends a year, I'm out doing this with you guys. So a lot of Friday nights I'm not home, and he said, you got to have some place where you add every week and you can fulfill your commitment every week. So I'm also at Thursday night into action. And that's what I like to call the total package in Alcoholics Anonymous. Matter of fact, you just heard it read here. I loved hearing the concepts read here tonight. Wasn't that good? Right? Because you don't hear that very much, right? So I call that the total package in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sponsorship, home group, big book, steps, and service. In my experience, which is the only thing I'm allowed to share from behind the podium, I have yet to meet an alcoholic of our type. And if you know what an alcoholic of our type is, read the book. I've yet to meet an alcoholic of our type who has taken that total package, applied it to their life one day at a time to the best of their ability, which, if you're new, is all that God requires, right? I'm not required to do more than I'm capable of. Just do the best I can this day with what I have. I've yet to see one do that and go back out and take a drink. I have not seen it happen one single time. If you're new here, I got a message for you tonight. The program of recovery was designed for success, not for failure. But I must participate in my own recovery. On the flip side of the coin, I have yet to see an alcoholic of our type, as described in our book, come in here, ignore those things, and stay sane, sober, or happy for any appreciable length of time. The simplicity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those who do get, and those who don't, and it's just that simple. I don't know about you, but I never sat in the bar room and watched somebody across the bar drinking, thought I could watch them drink and get drunk watching them drink. That's just as ridiculous as me coming in here, watching you get a sponsor in a home group and get active and help others, and think that magically, somehow, it's going to rub off on me. I looked at, I heard the steps here tonight. It didn't say I haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of attendance. Those who do get and those who don't, and it's just that simple. Called myself an alcoholic when I came up here. Didn't know what that was either. I always had a definition for an alcoholic growing up. I just say my definition of alcoholic was a sliding definition, because as my disease continued to progress, I kept fitting my definitions. So anytime I fitted, I'd have to change it. You asked me now as a teenager what an alcoholic was. I said somebody drunk every day. As a teenager, I became a daily drinker. That ain't it. I said an alcoholic is somebody that misses work, school, or important things in life because of drinking. It interferes with one's priorities in life. That certainly must be an alcoholic as a teenager. I began to miss work, school, ball practice, and, you know, stuff, important things in life because of drinking. That ain't it. Gave it a little thought, finally figured it out. Alcoholic is somebody who goes to jail because of drinking. Now, certainly that must be it, right? As you hear in a few minutes, I really had to change that one. By the time I staggered up in here, my definition of alcohol, y'all remember old Otis on the Andy Griffith Show? Old Otis, oh, the clothes always wrinkly, always had a pint of cheap wine on him. He'd be in and out of jail. I watched every episode of Andy Griffith Show, even the ones in color. I don't remember Otis working no place. Right? I saw it just, all right. That must be it, right? I always like to tell the story. It's a true story. I was over in London, England, talking at a conference, and I asked them that. Y'all remember Otis on the Andy Griffith Show? 2,000 people went, no. Dude, set me back like 10 minutes, right? I was stuttering from that point. I thought they had cable. I didn't know. I thought everybody knew AB, right? So what is this thing called alcohol? You know, I love hearing y'all laugh. Now, we are not a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. I had enough of misery and pain and suffering. And I God wanted me to be happy, joyous, and free. And I'm going to tell you something, because my story ain't a funny story. It ain't a funny story. No. But today, you know what? We can take those things and we can turn them to good account, can't we? And maybe we can avert death or misery for somebody else. So what is this thing called alcoholism? Threefold disease, mental, physical, spiritual. Mental part of it, they call it mental obsession to drink. What is an obsession? Very simply put, it's a thought so powerful that it will override or overcome any thinking that I can raise as a defense against it. What are some of the mental defenses I tried to raise against taking first drink? Well, I tried common sense. That's stupid. I won't do that again, right? That didn't work, right? I got sober. My grandmother told me, said, son, you weren't born with none of that, right? That's why that didn't work, right? I tried self-knowledge, you know, went over there, I've learned I can't do this, that didn't work, I drunk again, right? I tried, anybody ever try this one? Fear of consequences I might face if I drink. I'm in my late teens, I'm laying in the bed when I wake up, and I'm mentally making a list of all the reasons why I ain't drinking today. And I want to share something with you. If you're waking up in the morning and you're making a list of reasons why you shouldn't drink today, that's an indicator of a problem. All right, because people won't have a problem. Do not do that, right? If I drink today, I'm going to get kicked off the team, going to lose my girlfriend, get kicked out the house, flunk out of school, later on lose my job, dirty urine, I'm going to the penitentiary. All these things true in my life at one time or another. I don't want any of them, right? And if you drink like I drink, you usually got three or four of them going on at once, right? So I would lay in the bed, I'd take a look at all this stuff, and I would make a decision based on truth. Easiest kind of decision to make. I ain't drinking. I don't want these consequences, and I ain't drinking. And I meant it as much as I mean it tonight. Right? And then I get out of the bed. Right? And about 5 seconds later, this is the thought that comes floating into my head. It's Friday. It's Friday. And I've worked all week, which for me is 3 days, right? And you know, none of this is really my fault, right? I'm grown. This is the United States. of America, and I deserve, follow me if you knew. Right? So, our book talks about this, doesn't it? It says, parallel to this sound reasoning, the sound reasoning was, if I drink, this is the stuff that's going to happen, right? That's sound reasoning. It said, ransom insanely, circle the word insanely in your book, insanely trivial excuse to drink. It's Friday. Three days later, I'm standing before one of the authority figures in my life. Those changed over the years. My parents, the woman in my life, my boss, later on, the judge, right? And I'm trying to explain my behavior. And the question is asked, did you think we were kidding? How could you do this? It was Friday? That's nuts, right? Did I not do that? And I'm thinking to myself, that's crazy. I know it's crazy. Such is the power of obsession. We're talking about powerlessness. Physical allergy. Silkworth called it the phenomenon of craving. I didn't know what that was when I come in here. I used to work Ford Motor Company. Retired from Ford Motor Company. I worked for Ford Motor Company. I didn't have a car, which would show you the condition of my life. You get off work in the morning, I got to get a ride home from somebody, right? I was embarrassing, man, right? And I'm in the back seat, and I said, man, I've been thinking about a beer all night. Nobody in the front seat turned around and said, that's the mental obsession that precedes. We didn't know. Physical allergy to alcohol, simple story, true story. I'm cutting my grass on a 90-degree day, so is my non-alcoholic next-door neighbor. I'm riding on my lawnmower, he riding on his. He gets hot and thirsty, shuts his off, goes over to his deck, flips open a cooler full of cold beer, pulls out a cold one, he pops the top on her, he sucks her down. Now, I know ain't nobody in here gonna believe it, but with that full cooler of beer still sitting there, that man actually got back on his lawnmower. And finished cutting his grass. His thirst was quenched, right? Difference between me and my neighbor. I get off of my lawnmower and I pop a top on a cold one and I suck her down. It does not quench my thirst. What it does to me, and if you knew here, roll with me, maybe to you, is it makes me thirstier. And grass cutting is over. At the Coleman house. My lawnmower be sitting in that same spot 2 weeks from now when I get out of the county. That's the way I roll, right? Spiritual malady, soul sickness. My disease is rooted in selfishness and self-centeredness. I'm a guy who made a conscious decision about the age of 14 to manage my own life. Don't need God, don't need you. Got a better idea, right? And I set out to shape, form, and mold and control the people, places, and things around me to satisfy those basic God-given instincts for sex, for security, all those things that Bill talks about in the book. And a funny thing happened when I do that. The people, places, and things in my life refuse to cooperate. And as a result of that, our book calls it Playing God, doesn't it? And as a result of that, I grow even more restless and irritable and discontented. And I learned at the age of 14 that when I pour alcohol on that, I get what Dr. Silkworth calls a sense of ease and comfort, right? You see it. You've been in the bar room. You see a guy come in there with the weight of the world on his shoulders. You see that finger go up. You see that double header come down the bar. You see him throw it down. And this is what happens, don't it? The effect produced by alcohol. Alcohol's an answer for me. It ain't a problem. This disease of mind, body, and spirit is called alcoholism. And I don't know if you got it, but I definitely got it. And I don't treat it. Death, imprisonment, or commitment are guaranteed me. And if you don't believe that, stick around here and watch what happens to the people who don't. Now 55 years old, I was born in the city of Sandusky, Ohio. I was the second of three boys. I'd raised in a Christian home. I taught the difference between right and wrong before my grass ever hit the feet in the front yard. My feet ever hit the grass in the front yard. I had the finest mother and father that have ever graced this earth. I'm the son of Pete and Evelyn Coleman. My mother worked for Chrysler Corporation. My father worked for General Motors. And as I told you, I worked for Ford. All right? Well, I said we had a lot of craziness in the house, but we had really nice cars. But, you know, growing up, got everything we wanted, not everything we needed, everything we wanted. I had that kind of mother and father. Anything that we asked for within reason, we got. If we asked for something that wasn't within reason and they said no, we went to our grandmother. Because she lived with us and the word no was not in her vocabulary. And this is the upbringing that I had. My mother was the president of Ohio Baptist Women's Convention. My father was the commissioner of the local Little League. I came from a family that not only, you know, Wilson called these principles a set of principles spiritual in nature. Not only were those principles taught in my house, they were demonstrated. They were demonstrated. No, in our house, they told us honesty is the best policy. A real man is always honest with himself and other people. In my house, maybe in yours, we got automatic whoopings when we got caught lying. That happened to anybody else's house in here? That's step one. That's step one. The principle of step one is honesty. I learned that at the end of a hickory stick. There's a price to be paid for dishonesty. My mother said to me when I was 7 years old, come here, I want to talk to you. I'm worried about you. She said, contrary to what you believe, the sun does not rise when you wake up and set when you go to bed. She said, look out the window and tell me what you see. Sky, grass, trees, flowers, dogs, cats, people, cars, bicycles. She said, you think this just popped up out of nowhere? She said, Kenny, there's a power that's greater than you that created all of this, and all you have to do is be willing to believe that, step two. In our house, they said, if you will make a decision to put your life in the hands of the power that created all this, in my house, they call that power God. She said, you will always have what you need, no matter what happens outside or around you. My mother was teaching us that the answer is inside, not outside, step three. In our house, they told us, anytime you got a problem, no matter how bad you think it is, come talk to us about it. A problem shared is a problem half solved. You're only as sick as your secrets. No man is an island, they used to say. Right? That's steps four and five. My mom used to say the biggest room in a human being's life is the room for improvement. There are no perfect people. If you can make C's, you can make B's. If you can make B's, you can make A's. And if you'll ask the power that created all of this to help you grow in any positive way in any area in your life, the power will always help you. That's what the power does. That's step six and seven. And I also told us, if any time you hurt, harm, or wrong someone else, go make right the wrong you done. If you want an apology, make it. You owe time, give it. You owe money, pay it. Clean up your mess. That's what responsible people do. That's steps eight and nine. My mom used to say you can never go forward in life if you don't know where you are today and what you need to work on to get wherever it is you want to go. When you leave here today, try to go somewhere but don't know where you at. Try that. Right? I read a book about Socrates when I was in the 11th grade. Socrates said the uninventoried life is a waste. Step 10. Our grandmother said the secret to having a good day is simple. When you wake up in the morning, slide out of the bed onto your knees, say one word, please. As you go through the day and you don't know what to do, ask the power that created all of this to help you. And at night, before you get back in the bed, hit your knees again, say two words, thank you. Conscious contact with God. Step 11. In our house, they told us the greatest thing a human being could do with their life was not acquire money or material things. It was to be of service to others. We were taught to follow the golden rule. Talk to folk the way you want to be talked to. Treat them the way you want to be treated. Respect your elders and offer to share what you have with others before you have your own. Be of service to your fellow man. Step 12. When I got on the bus to go to kindergarten, I was already armed with a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that I know is the 12 steps. If you're new in here, I just took you through the steps. How many of you have heard those things before? Right? If you're new in here, I got a message for you. Spiritually principled living did not originate in Akron, Ohio in 1935. Those principles are ancient. And there's a lot of people out there who live like that every single day. And you know what? They don't expect a pat on the back for it either. Sometimes I'm amazed at the arrogance of people in meetings where I live. They'll say stuff like, boy, them people out there sure could use what we got in here. Where do you think we got it? Them drunks over in Akron and Cleveland in 35, Wilson staggering around? Are you kidding me? Those principles are ancient. They're ancient. Well, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, you had all that, what you doing leading an AA meeting tonight? That's a fair question. Right? And y'all know the answer too, don't you? I never did any of it, right? I talked about it a great deal. You come down to Brownlee's Tavern on a Friday night, this is what you would see. Somebody down to Brownlee's Tavern has a breakdown, and somebody had one every Friday night. And they start crying in their drink because they was losing their job, going to jail, and getting divorced, because that's what we do down to Brownlee's Tavern. Kent would stagger over to drink in his hand. I'd usually say something like this. Matthew chapter 5, verses 11 to 17 has the answer to your problem. I'm giving spiritual guidance down to Brownlee's Tavern. Drunk. You ever been in the bar and heard some drunk be quoting scripture? That was me. With my life savings laying on the bar, I give financial guidance down to Brownlee. I give plenty of marital advice down to Brownlee. Now, I had never had a wife, but I didn't see how that made a difference. My daddy called me a walking encyclopedia of perfectly useless information. And the reason is because none of it was born out of my experience. I was a parrot. I memorized things, I listened to you, and I go around repeating them. I did that when I came in AA. Anybody ever do that? I'm coming to AA and I'm repeating things because I was addicted to approval long before I was addicted to alcohol. And I come in here and I want you to like me. And when I see somebody get a pat on the back for saying something, I go to a meeting the next day, look around, make sure ain't too many people that was there the night before, make sure that person ain't there, and then I repeat what they say. Right? I have no idea what it means. Right? And many of these things are contrary to what our program teaches us. One of the big ones in my area, you ever heard this one? Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You ever heard that one? I asked my sponsor about that. He said, yeah, if you got a quarterly disease. You know where 90 meetings in 90 days, you know where that came from? You know where that came from? Came from treatment. Okay, a successful outcome back in the 70s when the treatment centers hit the hospitals was 120 days of sobriety. That was a successful outcome. They could record you as that, right? And they could get funded for the next year. Treatment at that time was 30 days, right? So when you left, what did they tell you? Do what? Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. 90 and 30 equals 120. That's where that comes from. It's not Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we've had things that have seeped into our culture here. We stay sober a day at a time where I come from. One day at a time. I asked old John Cunningham. John come in 44. I asked John. I said, John, how long do I have to go to these meetings? He said, till you decide you want to drink again. That's the kind of AA I was raised with. I had an older brother and younger brother. I was restless, irritable, and discontented as a kid. I'm one of them kids that, you know, you hear it sometime. And here, everybody's experience in here is different. But I always felt a half a step behind everybody else my own age. I always felt somehow less than, somehow inferior. It's a funny thing. Because I got divorced. I was 20 years sober. And when I made amends to my ex-wife, and, you know, and she made them to me, and we was talking, you know, she looked at me and she said, you know something, you've been sober a long time, Kent. She said, you are always enough. You are always enough. Well, it's this thing inside of me, right? And as a result of that, I start looking for answers, but I look outside, I don't look inside. And I'm a next thing kind of guy. It's the next thing. If I get this job, if I get this car, if I get this girl, if I get this house, if I get this degree. And I'm a guy who, when I decide to do something, I go get it. And then I would get that thing. That ain't it. Anybody know? Outside solutions don't address inside problems. My problems are spiritual in nature. If you're new here, a spiritual malady demands a spiritual solution, not a financial solution. Not a relationship solution, not an intellectual solution. A spiritual malady demands a spiritual solution. I haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. But I'm a kid and I don't know that. My first drink of choice is my older brother. I come from a football family. I always say some families do art, some families do music. My family do football. We do it on Saturdays and Sundays and we do it in front of a lot of people. My dad played at West Virginia State. My Uncle Bo played at Penn State. I had two cousins that played in the NFL for over 10 years. That's what my family do. There's no bear rug diaper pictures of us. It was us in diapers in a three-point stance in the middle of the living room. That's the truth. That's what my daddy was. That's a true story. We was like this, right? My older brother at the age of 16 was 6 foot two. He weighed 215 pounds. He could run a 4.440 on a cinder track and tennis shoes. And everybody wanted him, and he agreed to go to Ohio State University. We had a coach named Woody Hayes, and he loved Woody. And the last Saturday in August of 1972, we had a scrimmage with the Maslin Tigers in Ohio, and he suffered a head injury late in that scrimmage. And he collapsed on the sidelines, went into a coma that night, 9 hours of brain surgery on Monday. He died Wednesday, September the 5th, 1972. I remember like it was yesterday. Is that what made me alcoholic? Absolutely not. Everybody in here, any car out on the street, you'll get stories of death and tragedy. That's life, right? It's not what made me alcoholic. What it did to me, to be honest with you, when I look back at it now, I like how my friend Bob in Minnesota says, you know, life is lived forward but understood backwards. I can look back at that now and say, what it seemed to do is intensify the feelings of difference that I already had. Because this is 1972. They didn't send counselors to the high school like they do now. To deal with this kind of thing. Dude, in 1972, you're on your own. And I'm telling you, this just about killed my mother and father. I ain't going to even tell you what it did to my grandparents, right? She really changed the culture of athletics in our whole town. It has never been the same. That was 1972. It's never been the same. He was the golden boy. And that was a big deal back then. You know, I've never doubted the power and existence of God because I saw my mother do something when that happened. And I recognized then that it wasn't her. My family is about to crumble behind this deal, and I got this big family. And I watched my mother take our family, put it on her shoulders, and walk us through that. She stood up in that biggest funeral in the history of the city of Sandusky, according to the Follett House Museum. And I saw my mother stand up in front of 1,000 people at the funeral home and tell them that I don't know when, and I don't know where, and I don't know how, but good will come of this. I trust God. And you could just watch the whole place just de-escalate. And I knew that my mother didn't have that kind of power. In my darkest days in the street, I never doubted the power or existence of God. I just felt like I didn't need it. After my brother died, my mom used to talk to me a lot, and she used to say, Kenny, God's been so good to you. You're going to have a wonderful life and help other people. Blah, 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 blah. And I used to look at my mother, you know, yeah, you do, you know. I'm 14. I'm like, really? Let me tell you something. I ain't got no desire to be of service to God, you or anybody else. You want to know what I want out of life? I want mine. I want to get it my way, and I'm going to need you to leave me alone while I'm doing it. Because I ain't going to do it the way you do it, right? And my, you know, she would get that, you know how your mother do, they get that sad look on their face. Oh, we didn't raise you that way. You don't get it. And I pointed my finger. I said, you the one who don't get it. If you don't think my way going to work, get out the way and watch. No, selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed, and according to my mother, mean as a rattlesnake, I had yet to take a drink of alcohol. I tell people I was the perfectly tilled soil for the disease of alcoholism. All I needed to do was water it and see if I had the physical allergy, and that day did come. Got in the car with a guy that whose life I lived in my head. Anybody relate to that? No, I don't live in the real world with the rest of you. I live up here. And Johnny was 2 years older than me. He was my best friend's older brother. He was the captain of the basketball team. We all played basketball at Sandusky High School. He had a snazzy car pocket full of money. He ran around with the kind of girls I ran away from. And I got in the car with Johnny, and Johnny said, hey, Coleman, you want to get something to drink? I had been warned about drinking. I had been given all the warnings. Alcoholism does not run in my family. It gallops. And I had been told, look at your Uncle Ed, look at Junior. Didn't have it in my house, but both sides of my family are rife with the disease of alcoholism. But if Johnny had said to me that day, let's go rob the carry out, I guarantee you I would have done so. It's a little sense of self that I have. And we went through the drive through. We bought 10 quarts of Schlitz malt liquor bull. Now, to the newcomers in here, the quart preceded the 40 ounce. Right? It was 32 ounces of beer. And he said, five for you, five for me. That's a lot of beer for a youngster. Dropped the convertible top on that beautiful Pontiac, cranked up the music, rode through the streets of Sandusky, and we drank that beer. And a couple things happened that day, but what I'm going to tell you, what happened that day is my life changed. I went from shy, insecure, and afraid to bold, confident, suave, debonair, and absolutely fearless in about 20 minutes. We pulled behind the Derrick Apartments where all the thugs hung out. I have not said five words in public in the last 3 years. We pulled up. People surrounded the car. The music was blasting. I looked at Johnny. I said, turn that music down. There's a few things I want to tell a few people who are present here this afternoon that I have been wanting to tell them for quite some time. I got some things I want to get off my chest. And I went around that circle of hoodlums, told each and every one of them not only what I thought of them, but what they needed to do, in my opinion, to improve themselves. The reaction of the guys around that car, guys started leaning in the car and hugging me and saying, see, I told you. I told you my boy, all right, he's loosening up. He's doing a little drinking. He's one of us. Do you get it? Approval. Connection. And dude, I connected the dot. When I drink, I change. And so do you. And I now have the approval of the people whose approval I want the most. Not mom and dad. That was them drive-by shooters behind the Derrick apartment. Alcohol equals success, and you better believe I got it. We left from there, went over to the home of some of them girls he run around with, I run away from. Never been over there in my life. I walked into that home like I was paying the mortgage. I went, I sat down at the dining room table, and I looked across the room, and I made eye contact with a girl I still say is the finest girl to graduate from Sandusky High School in its 173-year history. I had never even breathed in her direction, much less said hello. And I looked at her, and she looked up at me, and I said, come here. And she got up and started walking toward me. Now, any sane human being at this point would probably think, gee, Kenneth, you weren't so shy and scared. Look what you could have done just by speaking up. Is that what I thought? Nope. If you knew in here, I want you to roll with me for a minute. Here's what I thought. If you had been drinking before now, look what you could have done. Follow me. Look what you've been missing. I want you to understand something. This is my first drunk. Alcohol's already an answer for me. Now, this is an honest program, and I will be honest with you here tonight. When she got over there to me, I had no idea what to do with her. I don't think that far ahead when I'm drinking. Right? So guys like me watch a lot of TV. I got a lot of time on my hands, right? On TV, they go like this. So I did. And she sat down in my lap, and my life changed again. And the upshoot to this whole little story is on that day, alcohol did for me what I couldn't or wouldn't do for myself. For the first time in my life, I felt whole. And that's a very powerful thing. And I know today that alcohol's not supposed to do that. What happened the rest of that day? Tell you the rest of my drinking history. You know, there's a lot of people come in here and you ain't been to jail and you haven't lost your stuff and lost jobs and families and all that, and you ain't got to. You can get off the elevator at any floor. If you're new in here, jail is not a requirement for recovery. Right? Well, but that's not my experience. Right? If this here was a drink, and I stood here tonight and took a drink, a cop would drop right out of that light and land in the middle of that floor. Really? Old timers in Cleveland, when I was new, used to say, drink trouble, drink trouble. I was like, I got that. I might not get nothing else in here, but I get that. Right? What happened the rest of that day? Rest of my drinking history, went into blackout. Have no idea what went on the next 4 or 5 hours. According to eyewitnesses at the house, eyewitnesses to play a big part in the rest of my story. Came in the front door, I threw up a trail through the house, through the living room, through the kitchen, through the family room. I went in the bathroom, hit everything but the toilet. Next thing that I remember is my mom knocking on that bedroom door. Come out here, clean up this mess, you know you've been drinking. Blah, 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 blah. I staggered into the hallway in what later years would be my drinking uniform, my underwear. Father Pete used to say I had a hangover you could take out and look at. I mean, dude, I'm dying. I go in the bathroom, she's still screaming in the hallway. I close the bathroom door, put my hands on the bathroom sink. I look in bloodshot eyes in that mirror, and this is what I said. If you're new here, roll with me. Man, oh man, I cannot wait to do that again. Grounded for life is what was being discussed in the living room and how they was going to carry that. I got grounded for life. So what I did, what I like to do prior to AA, I had a meeting with myself. Now, I didn't have a meeting with myself because I could solve most things. I'm the guy that Einstein was thinking of when he said, you cannot solve problems with the mind that created them, right? So I'm in the bathroom, and here's the thought that comes to me. All right, Kent, let's take a look at it this evening. You got drunk? Yep. You got sick? Yep. You got grounded for life? Yep. All this is true. Now, the problem here, Kent, is not, follow me, that you got drunk. Problem here is that you got sick. What you got to do is learn how to drink without getting sick. Anybody in here get that? All right, I'm 14 years old, and I'm gone, and I don't look back until I'm 32. And in the next 18 years, just about everything that could happen to a human being and not kill them happened to me. And, you know, I want to tell you something. I'm not a guy who stands behind a podium and glorifies alcoholism. You will not hear me sitting around here talking about these war stories and euphoric recall of all these good times I had drinking. Let me tell you something. Because I heard somebody say it in a meeting at the club and get pats on the back, I said it at the wrong meeting. I was at the poor Clinton Nooners, and I said, boy, I had a good time drinking, because the guy said at the club, and everybody clapped him on the back and said, yes, we did, didn't we? Now, nobody at the club was staying sober, but. And I said that at a meeting, and there was a man at that meeting, his name was Jim Redmond. He died, he was 53 years sober. Jim Redmond looked at me, and he said, really? He said, let me ask you something, big shot. He said, if I got the girl you live with, your parents, your co-workers, your boss, and your creditors in here. And I sat them down and said, you know, Ken had a really good time out there drinking. What kind of time did you guys have? What do you think they'd say? I told him I don't want to have that meeting. Let me explain something to you. Here's Kent's definition of a good time. Any consequences that have to be paid as a result of my drinking and my behavior are paid by somebody else. That's my definition of a good time. Because somebody always has to pay. Prior to me picking up a drink of alcohol, there was no hollering or screaming in our home. Prior to me picking up a drink of alcohol, there were no sleepless nights in our home. Prior to me picking up a drink of alcohol, there was no guilt and shame in our home. I brought those things into that house, and I infected the people who loved me most with them until they got so sick that they were sicker than I was. My father come down and got me out of jail one Saturday night, which was not an uncommon occurrence in my life. And I don't even remember what this was for. Probably fighting or something, but my father came, he had to get a bail bondsman to get me out of jail. And when he was driving me home, this is what my father said to me. He said, I'm going to get a couple $1,000 and stash it at the house. So, you know, when this happens, I'll have the money and I'll have to get no bit. That's what I did to my dad. And I want to stand up here and talk about the good times I had drinking. Makes me sick. Selfish, self-centered pig. That's what Jim Redmond called me. And he was right. At the age of 16, I had a 1 o'clock curfew in a car and a fake driver's license. And I went to a place in Toledo that I heard about on the radio. And I had a 1 o'clock curfew. At 1 o'clock, I was drinking a gin and juice and dancing with a woman older than my mother. And I came home at 4:30 in the morning, and my mother was always up when I came home. And she used to yell at the bedroom light would be on, and she would yell at me, Kenny, come here, I want to see you. And I would stick my head around the corner and look at her in the room, and I would say, for God's sake, why are you up? If y'all go somewhere, I don't sit up here half the night waiting on y'all to come home. I want you to understand the depth of this selfishness and self-centeredness. I'm so full of me, I can no longer even comprehend the love of a parent for a child. It makes no sense to me. Am I making sense? It makes no sense to me. I'm so full of me, I can't even see you anymore. When I come home at 4:30, she wasn't in the bedroom. She's sitting on the couch. I walked into the house. She got tears rolling down her face. The living room lamp is on. And this is what my mom told me. She said, Kenny, as your parents, we owe you a roof over your head, food to eat, clothes on your back, and education. We have fulfilled our part of the bargain. But, buddy, I got something you can't have. She said, that's my peace of mind. She said, Kenny, you're going to penitentiary, to cemetery, and I got news for you, buddy. I ain't going with you. I'm giving you to God. I'm done. Go. Do what you want. I'm done. And this is what I said to my mom. I broke you. I broke you. And I want you to know something, Ma. I'm a little bit disappointed you such a spiritual giant. Because it wasn't even that hard. And I walked away and left her sitting there. That's me at age 16. And if that's how I treated my mother, how do you think I treated yours? Went off to college. I went to one of the finer institutions, the higher level. I was a straight A student. And I give God credit for that today. I'm a guy that I wasn't challenged by school. And my first father, Bill, used to always tell me, he said, son, anytime you're in a room alone, all your enemies are there. I was 14 years old. I was sitting in study hall, and I had a visit from the enemy, my thinking. And here's what I thought. I was 14. I thought, geez, you know, these people breaking their neck trying to get B's and C's, taking general math and science. I'm taking calculus, physics, fourth-year Latin, fourth-year English. I'm a sophomore, and I'm getting straight A's. You know, it just might be entirely possible that I know everything. So you see what you're dealing with, right? I go off to college. I'm drunk for 5 years, and I'm a complete and total animal. I have no more parental interference, and I'm an animal. And I did what I wanted, and I'm still making amends to that university, and I've been gone from there a long, long time, since 1981. And I want to say something. God will make a way. I thought I could never write some of the stuff I did down there. And I went down there and I told them who I was and that I wanted to try to help. They had 5 overdose deaths on that campus in 1 year. And this is a very prestigious university. They have a massive problem with alcoholism and drug addiction. And they told me to come back in a couple of weeks. They checked me out. At this time, I had retired from Ford, and I was the director of Stella Maris in Cleveland, which is the second oldest treatment center in the world on Skid Row in Cleveland. And I was the director of that place at this point. And they checked me out, and they told me to come back down there, and I did. And they said, we checked you out. There's people here who remember you. I said, well, all that notwithstanding. And they welcomed my help. And I still am doing some things for them today. They told me recently the only problem we got with you is that you don't live here. And that's pretty cool. Trust me, God make a way. It's an old timer in Vegas, Dick T. And Dick used to say, a way will be shown. A way will be shown. I came back to work as an hourly person. I got in a union over the summertime at the Ford plant. By the time I got out of school, you know, when I went to school, I had some goals and dreams. And read Bill's story, right? And so Bill began to construct activity in his life to support his goals and dreams, right? He went to law school, right? He hung out on Wall Street. He did all this stuff to set himself up. But somewhere the worm turned, didn't it? Remember when Bill said golf, he took up golf because golf permitted drinking every day and every night. See, when I read Bill's story, when I read the literature, right, I got to look at it from in here, not from up here. Did I do that? Well, I look back at my life. You know where I went to work? You don't need a college degree to go work in an automotive plant on the line. Why? Because it accommodated my drinking. I'm at the point now where it's no longer an option. Bill said it's a necessity, right? They had something in there I needed. It's called a union. Because if you don't go to work like I don't go to work, and you come to work drunk like I come to work, you need a union. Right? I worked a midnight shift because there wasn't no boss. I set my whole life up to accommodate my drinking. But I don't see this. I don't see it. Get out of this drinking thing. I was convicted of driving under the influence of alcohol 7 times in the state of Ohio. I've been convicted on felony weapons and drug charges. I was banned for life from Lucas County. That's where Toledo, Ohio is. It's a big county. I was banned for life from that county. 3 felonies and 11 misdemeanors in one night. And they banned me for life. I couldn't believe it. I said, really? You see how many people in this room? That's how many eyewitnesses they brought to court. And my grandfather was alive, and my grandfather was a wealthy man. He got me the best lawyer in Toledo. I should have went to prison for years for what I did. And I stood in front of a judge who told me, don't even fly over Lucas County in an airplane, because if you crash here and you live, you're going to jail. Yeah, they thought it was funny at court, too. I didn't think it was funny. And they banned me for life from Lucas County. And you know what I'm not doing? You know, why would I ever want to come back here anyway after the way you people treated me? That's how sick I am. That's how sick I am. The last 3 years of my drinking are the darkest days of my life. I tried everything I could think of. I didn't want to live like that. I wasn't raised to live like that. When I got sober, one of my cousins told me that she came by my house with my mom. And the front door of my house was knocked off. The drug task force had paid us a visit. And I hadn't bothered to put it back up because I figured they'd be back. And she said, we walked up and we looked in the screen door. And she said, you know, Kenny, beer cans were 3 feet deep almost in that whole room. And she said, you were laying on the couch face down, passed out. And she said, and your mother just stood in the door and cried. I didn't know that till I got sober. But I ain't hurting nobody. I'm having fun. And the last 3 years, you know, I changed shifts at work. I got the booze out of the house. I quit hanging around them guys. I went back to church. I couldn't shut it off. I was drunk every day. At the end of the last year of my drinking, I went to a place, called cold-blooded, cold-hearted indifference. I quit caring. Now, it's one thing for me to love you and another thing for me to hate you. At least I still feel something for you. That means there's some hope. I went to a place where the 3 most prominent words in my vocabulary were, I don't care. Dr. Bob talked about that. Just total indifference to my fellow man. I believe in my heart that that's as far away from God as a human being can get. And I don't want to forget that that's where I ended up. I got a liver that's distended about 7 inches. Every time I take a drink of old granddad, I cough all this white stuff up. What I found out later, I was suffering from alcohol poisoning, but my body would no longer metabolize the alcohol I was drinking. What I was coughing up was pure alcohol. My body is now rejecting what my mind is obsessed with. I'm 32 years old and I'm dying of alcoholism. How dark it is before the dawn. Came out of the pump lounge. And I had what they call a moment of clarity or a moment of sanity. There was a guy in Cleveland, six-pack Charlie Kitchen. Charlie said, that's the moment when God paralyzes the liar in you long enough for you to see the truth. And I got in the car, and my head just cleared up. First time in almost 20 years, here's what I saw. Ken, if you don't stop drinking, you're going to die, and you better get some help because you can't do it by yourself, and you better do it now because you're running out of time. Out of nowhere. I'm a great believer in the power of prayer. I believe I was prayed in here. No. And my friend Ralph says, and I was sweetly reasonable. I was sweetly reasonable. Bill used to say, AA works best when you run out of ideas. And I didn't have any more. And I called a guy, my best drinking buddy from college. He's a doctor today. His house is as big as this hotel, and I ain't joking. And I called Rich, you know. I owed him $5,000. Didn't even know if he would take a call for me, because that's what I do. I'm a user and a taker. And his wife answered the phone and she said, Richard is Ken. And that's just how she said it. And Rich got on the phone and I said, Rich, it's your boy, man. I need some help. And this is what he said to me. He said, man, I've been waiting for this call for 7 or 8 years. Pack a bag, stay by the phone, I got you. And he is not a member of this fellowship. When I get a call from the North Central Intergroup Office of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sandusky, Ohio at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know what I tell a guy on the other end of the phone, don't you? Pack a bag, stay by the phone, I got you. And for that, I am responsible. He told me that he lived in Centerville outside of Dayton. He was putting me in a hospital treatment center in Xenia, Ohio, about 225 miles from where I live. Next morning, my brother and his wife in the front seat. I'm in the back seat with a case of Genesee beer on my way to treatment. Now, I didn't know too much about treatment, but I had figured out on my own they probably wasn't serving no liquor down there. So I got to drinking. We speeding down I-75. I got a couple of them Jennies in me, and you know what I had, don't you? I had a visit from the enemy, my thinking. And here's the thought that occurred to me after I got a little beer in me. You know, I just may have overreacted here. That ain't that bad. Right? I'll start my comeback tomorrow, right? What I didn't know is that my dad told my brother and his wife, I give you $100, you don't bring that tramp back here. That's a true story. So when I told him to turn around, my brother, he wanted that hun, so he wouldn't turn around. So they carried me on down to Richard's house. I'd knee-walking drunk by the time we got down there, because at this point in time, it don't take much for me to get drunk. Y'all know what four-stage alcoholism looked like. And Richard put me in his car, bought me a quart of Miller, said it was always your favorite. He drove me from his home in Centerville down to Green Memorial Hospital in Xenia, Ohio, pulled in the parking lot, put his car in park, turned and looked at me. I had this much left in that quart. He said, go ahead, dog, finish that, and don't ask me how I know it, man. He said, that's the last drink you're ever going to take. That was the 17th of May, 1992. I have not had another drop of alcohol or anything stronger than an aspirin since that day, and I would have never believed it possible, and the reason is because Alcoholics Anonymous works. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. To our new friends in here, relapse is not a requirement for recovery, nor is it a part of recovery. Where I live at, they'll come back in, and they'll stand up, and they'll reintroduce themselves. I'm John Doe. I'm back. I done relapsed. But really, John, Kent, can I ask you a couple questions? Sure, Kent. John, did you have a sponsor? No. Well, did you read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and apply the 12 steps to your life a day at a time as best you could? No. Did you have a home group and a commitment here, John? No. Well, John, can you tell me, what did you relapse from? I'm serious about this. We got people coming in here, sitting, doing nothing, going out here and drinking, and saying they relapse. A relapse is a return to a prior condition. If the prior condition is untreated alcoholism, and the treatment for alcoholism is the application of the steps, and a home group and a sponsor, and you haven't done those things, you have not relapsed, you've continued to drink. And we got people coming in here and saying, AA don't work, why don't you tell the truth? I came to some AA meetings, I didn't do anything that was suggested to me, and I continued to drink, and I don't know if AA works or not, because I've never done it. I spent 35 days in a 28-day program. My insurance ran out in 28 days. They called up to the plant. They said, we don't think Kent's ready to leave the hospital. You know what they said up to the plant? We don't either. And you think nobody knows, right? And I got out of there and I came home and they told me, get a sponsor, get out there and work the steps. You know what they tell you. You know, I went to treatment at a good place. I spent 35 days on step one. I thank God for them people. They didn't have me writing no fourth to fifth step like a lot of treatment centers do. They saw real quick what they was dealing with. I was real sick. And I came home and I started to play a game. It's called Don't Drink, Go to Meetings, and Don't Do Nothing Else. If I put my arm through a window and I cut an artery in my arm, I start bleeding all over the floor. I put a towel on my arm. I drive myself to the hospital. I run in the emergency room, bleeding all over the floor. Doctor comes out and says, come on back, Mr. Coleman. We'll treat you now. I sit there in the emergency room, bleeding to death. Look at the doctor and go, no, thank you. I'll just sit here. And I bleed to death in the emergency room. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the emergency room. I've been coming to these meetings long enough now. I've watched people who attend these meetings on a daily basis die of untreated alcoholism before my very eyes. The treatment for the disease I suffer from is a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, period. I went to 250 meetings in 3 months and ended up in the parking lot of Daly's Pub. I'm a guy that when I stop drinking, I don't get better. My dad got a DUI when I was a sophomore in college. I was 19 years old. He called me up. He was on his way home from the bowling alley. He called me up and said, you know, boy, I got a DUI last night. He said, I had a couple beers at the bowling alley. He said, I don't need that kind of trouble in my life. And my dad never drank again, and he was happy, joyous, and free. So I made a mental note of that. So I said, well, if I ever get a DUI, I do like Dad did, right? And just stop it, right? But of course, we know that I had 7. Because see, I'm not like Dad was. My dad wasn't alcoholic. Alcohol wasn't an answer for him. And after 250 meetings in 3 months, I'm in the parking lot of Daly's Pub, and I'm vibrating. I'm getting angrier and angrier. And a guy at work said, for God's sake, go take a drink. You're driving us all crazy. Because not drinking doesn't work for me if I don't have a power to tap into. And I said my first prayer in AA, 3 months in AA, sitting in that car, the parking lot of Daly's Pub. And the prayer was simple, God, what am I doing wrong? And like a lightning bolt came the answer, what are you doing right? If you go to that many meetings in 3 months, because I loved meetings. You hear it every day, don't you? Get a sponsor, read the book, work the steps, get a home group, help others. I didn't do none of that. I treated AA like a cigarette-smoking, donut-dunking coffee clutch. And instead of going into Daly's Pub, thank you, God, I turned the key in that ignition, and I went to Lorain, Ohio, and I walked into the Compass Group. Because the old-timers of my group said, there's a guy that lives in Lorain, and he helps guys like you. You know, I mean, I was scared of Mr. Finley. Everybody in Ohio was, Chris laughed, but everybody's scared of Mr. Finley. He's a man who traveled the world doing big book. I've been privileged. I know pretty much everybody, you know, that's known in AA. I've never known anyone like him. No one has he glowed with this thing. We did a sponsorship tree and we stopped at 2,500 guys. He was a throwback to the early days of AA. His sponsor was Dr. Bob. And that's how I was given AA. Real simple, real plain. Go help somebody. I used to call Bill and I'd be like, Bill, here's my list of grievances for the day. Right? And I'd tell him how I had been mistreated and people hadn't cared for me properly and they don't talk to me right, you know, and all this. And he would listen. And then he would, after I get done, he'd say, who you helping? I said, Bill, you're not listening. Let me read this again because this is truly tragic. And I'd read it again. And then he would say, who are you helping? Click. He has Parkinson's. He can no longer walk or talk. He went down to Hawaii to talk. That was his last trip, talking. And when he came back, he said that, I can't travel anymore. Wheelchairs, my wife has to dress me. He said, I'm done. And that's the man that raised me in AA, and that's who I went to see that day. And this is what he told me. He says, I will take you through the steps out of the book as was done with me. He said, I will show you how I live this way of life. it will be up to you to do the same. He told me, bury yourself knee deep. He said, no. He said, change. He said, bury yourself shoulder deep in this thing called AA so you can't teeter and fall. And I've been shoulder deep in AA from that day to this. The power of example here is very strong. And Bill took me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as I try to live them in my life to this day. I'm going to get out of here so y'all can eat ice cream. But, I had a chance to make amends to my mom. I had to move back in my mother and father's house. I was living in a spot. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. Can't stay sober in a spot. And my dad said, you can come back here, but one slip up and you're gone. And I was allowed, they had barred me from life, for life from their home, from me stealing from them. And I came back into that home, and Bill said, no talking. I want you to do what you ain't done in 32 years, and that's go in that house and be the kind of son God put you on this earth to be to your mom. My mother was dying of bone cancer at that time. And I got to help my dad take care of my mom. And my mom saw me go to all them AA meetings. My mom saw me bring my first sponsees into her house and sit at her kitchen table and open a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and talk about God. My mama saw me put on a shirt and a tie and go speak at AA meetings when I didn't even have a suit. Got close to the end. Bill said, it's time. Go make you direct. I got her off the morphine. I went to the hospital. I had a big speech planned out, right? And I got there, and I sat down beside her bed, and my mom had the biggest brown eyes I've ever seen. And my mom looked at me, and I looked at my mom, and tears was running down her face and mine. And the only thing that I could get out of my mouth was, Mama, I'm sorry. And my mom looked at me, and she beamed at me, and she said, I forgive you. She said, Kenny, I want you to promise me that you'll stay with those people in AA. They were able to do for you what we could not. They were the answer to our prayer. I promised her I would, and I have. And I have. My mom died holding my hands and looking in my eyes with my whole family up there, and I had a big family calling her name, and my uncle stood in the back and said, don't call her no more because she ain't going to look away from him. That's how she wants to go. That's how my mama left this earth. And I've been blessed a billion times over since then, but if I never got nothing else, that was enough. Thank God for the fellowship and the program, sponsorship, home group, and support of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, God. My dad died. I was 18 years sober, and there was nothing left on the table between me and the old man. My father was a Korean War hero, Purple Heart. My dad was a good guy. He's a good guy. My dad saw me get married and saw the birth of my two daughters. And my daughters and my dad, they had a special thing going, I'm telling you. My oldest daughter was little. She said, Dad, is Granddaddy your daddy? I said, no, honey, no, he's not. I said, Granddaddy is a fictional character. That is not the same man who lived in the house with me. It's Granddaddy. Really? He's just sitting back while she's tearing up his house going, ho, 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 ho. We had a really great time. I was the last person to see my father alive. And when I left, I knew that I was going to be the last time I left this hospital room. It was 10 o'clock at night. And he said, take care of them girls. And I said, Daddy, I will. And I had. I got divorced at 20 years sober. My ex-wife is now 25 years sober. She's a wonderful member of AA and is a wonderful human being. There's a law. It's called cyclical reciprocity. I'm going to share it with you right quick before I go. When it rains, the water will nurture and nourish the soil. And the soil in return will emit humidity and it will refill the cloud. You get it? If I got a mule that plows a field for 8 hours and I give it 8 hours worth of food to replenish that energy, it will continue to work. However, if I only give it 4, eventually the mule will begin to starve. If I have a job where I have to build 100 units a week and they pay me $100, And then I start building 60 units a week. Eventually, I will curse that relationship and it will end. If I am in a relationship where one person is given 100% and I'm given 60, as over time, I will starve that relationship. Am I making sense to you? That's why I ain't married today. And here's the thing about it, is I was so arrogant that when she was trying to tell me that, I completely discounted it and patronized her. Yeah, I hear you, right? Because my default position is I'm right. And when my default position is I'm right, like I was growing up, know everything, I can't hear or see you anymore. Am I making sense? Okay. And so that's what happened with that. Now, and I moved to Las Vegas after that, and I was devastated, and my wife had cancer, which was triggered the whole thing, and it was a crazy time. And Bob was my sponsor by that time, and I got to Las Vegas, I went to Bob's house, and he rocked me to sleep. I love my sponsor. And so I'm back home now. I'll be back at least till I get my oldest daughter out of high school. And we have a great time. If you're new here, I want to leave you with something. They give me a tape of a man named Warren Chisholm Sr., 12th man in AA in Cleveland. He was a friend of my first sponsor, Bill. And in that tape, Warren Chisholm Sr. made this statement, that anyone who comes here who is willing to practice the principles and precepts of this program, as outlined by the founders in the big book, need never drink again one day at a time. I ran to my sponsor. I said, Bill, he cannot say that, never drink again. Bill said, oh, yes, he can. He said, and I'm going to tell you why I can't. He said, it's real simple. He said, it's because this is a spiritual program, and God doesn't fail. There is no failure in connection with this great program. God doesn't fail. But I have to participate in my own recovery. God will not do for me what I can do for myself. But he will do for me what I cannot do for myself. Those who do get, and those who don't. And it's just that simple. If I said anything that helped anybody tonight, thank God, do not thank me. And if I didn't say nothing to help you tonight, guess what? You got some terrific speakers coming tomorrow. God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. God could and would if he were sought. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Good night.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.